We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 37 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're grateful to have you join us in this learning and leaning in podcast environment. As expected, we have another spectacularly fearsome female education leader with us today. Keisha, I am so excited to meet RT. I've heard about her for years in our conversations with you. And so let's learn a little bit more about RT Nagaraj. RT enjoys creating measurable, positive, enduring outcomes for learners of all ages. She has harnessed technology to create innovative learning programs for employees at Apple, Facebook, Google, and Uber worldwide. And is Director of Learning Events at EdSurge and Director of the Learning Innovation Hub at Silicon Valley Education Foundation, RT built strategies and tool sets to empower school leaders, edtech entrepreneurs, and teachers to make thoughtful technology decisions for teaching and learning. RT was a trustee of the Saratoga Union School District Board since 2010 and was board president for 2 years. I'm going to want to learn more about that. RT has a master's in education, media and technology from Boston University, and a bachelor's in early childhood education from India. RT is currently serving as principal of Prakul's Youth Development Society. Boy, we are excited to have RT join us today, aren't we, Keisha?
Oh my goodness, yes. And it should be noted that she's joining us all the way from India. And she's going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. I'm not even sure where she is in India because her family is spread all over the country. So I can't wait for her to share that incredible story with our listeners. RT, each week we explore models of leadership together. And we ask our guests kind of what they see in the mirror. So what's their reflection of their own self? Any mentors or role models that have impacted their career or life's work or just life in general? And then we want you to think about some movements that you've either been involved in or you've witnessed that inspire and ignite maverick moments. So, as you can already see, that's a ton of M's, and we call it our pattern of M.
Yeah, Keisha, and don't you forget, we don't want to miss any edubabble in addition to learning about those great M's. So, I caught one that sometimes we don't really know what it means because it changes in different regions and contexts. And so with that being said, I'm wondering, RT, what is the role of a trustee? Welcome to the show. Help enlighten us.
Well, thank you, Keisha and Frances, for inviting me. Yes, I'm in India. It's in the northern foothills of the Himalayas. It's in a place called Dehradun. Was a small town, but it's now becoming a bigger and bigger city. So to get back to the definition of, who is a trustee, it's a member of the board of people who are elected or appointed to promote the interests of a school, of a local public school district. So a trustee is a member of a school board and is an elected official.
And you did a phenomenal job in that role. I got to hear a lot of incredible stories, nothing that wasn't supposed to be shared if any of the trustees are listening, but just wonderful work that you did in Saratoga and the incredible outcomes of your work. And I think a lot of people think that the board position is a thankless position, which it is, but the work that you do in that role is so instrumental to having the proper funding and the proper support for all the students who attend your school. So thank you for your service to that incredible district and the district the school that you're supporting now, which of course we're going to hear more about. So let's get started with our first M. Who are your role models, RT, and why?
So my role models I look at are Maria Montessori, And, you know, everyone knows Maria Montessori. I went to a Montessori school. That was my first school when I was growing up in India. And then I turned out to be a Montessori teacher. I got certification. And I just believed in, you know, it was just whatever I read about Maria Montessori and the work that she did inspired me every day. The other person I sought inspiration from or, you know, was a person by the name of Jiddu Krishnamurti. He was also an educator and philosopher in India, and I went to one of his schools growing up. My high school was a boarding school that was started by him. So it really, basically, it kind of drove people from who they are. They brought out the inner person versus being a cookie cutter person. You see, like, you're not run of the mill. You be bold and you take chances and you, it's each person is an individual. So honor that.
I love that honoring of that uniqueness as you shared, and finding that inner spirit and that inner voice and bringing that out. You know, some of the folks that really help us do this well are the mentors in our life. And our mentors come in lots of different forms. Individuals we work closely with, family members, mentors that we may have never even met. But I'm curious, who might be one of your greatest mentors? Who speaks to you in that inner sense?
I don't know if anybody has said this before on your show, but, you know, my mentor has been my husband of 30 years. So, you know, he's always been there, and I've always sort of said, okay, so now what should I do? And, you know, his wise old self would say, well, you know, if you were to do it this way, this is what would happen. And if you were to do it that way, this is what where you would might lead to. So let's discuss it and let's figure out where what's the best thing. So, you know, it was all he's always been there for me. He's showed me new things. He's allowed me to take risks. He and you know, he's yelled at me too. Like, why do you think you're doing this? Remind yourself. Ask yourself, why are you doing this? What's the impact you want to make? And always asking me those right questions at the right time. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's strange, but yeah, it's been my husband all through. And even now, even though he is in a different city and for a year he was still in California and I was in India, it was still this whole cycle of, okay, what should I do next? And, or am I doing the right thing?
And he has, I mean, I've never met your husband, but I envy with so much envy, which probably isn't the best word to use, but the freedom that he gives you to just explore anything, any way, and not that, you know, not that a lot of husbands are, you know, lock and box, but my husband would be devastated if I said, I want to move to back, you know, back to my home country, you while you are here in the States, and I am going to lead a school, and I will miss you terribly, but this is what I'm going to do. My husband would be like, oh, wait a minute, hold on. And your husband was like, I'm so proud of you. So I think that is true love. I mean, not that my husband doesn't love me, but that's like love at a whole nother level, sister. I mean, that is just like way up there. And I just applaud him for being such a phenomenal partner to you in your individuality and your growth. I think, yeah. I just, like I said, I've envied it for a long time. So it's, putting it out there.
It's also, it's not just love, it's the respect. You know, it's the respect for each other and the respect we have for each other's work and whatever we do. I mean, you know, he did his PhD at the age of 50. You know, and it was his dream, and you know, we said, yeah, let's just do it, and so he did.
Yeah,
and so it's sort of like giving each other our own space, but at the same time, guiding each other as well as listening and asking and growing together, basically.
It's so beautiful. You should be blogging about it so other people could like learn how to do that. All right. The next M is the mirror. And this is usually our guest's kind of favorite and also maybe most challenging question to answer. So when did you look in the mirror and see a leader looking back at you?
So this was back in 2014. I was on the school board. And that's, you know, I had been on the school board for 4 years. And I was up for sort of being the president of the board. And that's when I said to myself, I said, okay, I can do this because I have the confidence and I have the desire and the skills to be a leader because I want to make a difference. Believe it or not, when I started on the school board in 2010, I had a fear of public speaking. For the first 6 months, I would hardly say anything sitting on the board. I would be shaking, like, oh my, am I saying the right thing? Because these are public meetings. You have, you know, this audience, and I had, you know, really senior people on the board with me, my colleagues who had been on the board for many years, and here I was just, and I had no idea. I was like, I can't speak in front of these people. I didn't have the guts. But I built up that courage and I said, yes, I can do this. And I did it. And I was the board president for 2 years. And I went through a lot in those 2 years, including impasse and Common Core and almost a teacher walkout and schedule changes, timetable. I mean, yes, it was pretty nuts. So, yeah, that was my looking in the mirror moment.
Well, it sounds like you always had the presence and the guts, as you said, right? But it was finding a way for that voice to be heard by others, right? You heard that voice and you knew you needed to be in that leadership role. And when others heard that voice, it was really actualized for you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you, as Keisha has mentioned, have been a leader, like, literally all over the world, right? You're a global icon. And so as you think about being a leader in lots of different places, you've also seen different ways that women lead in these spaces and places. And this idea of how connected we are and also connected in this female spirit. And so I'm curious, what are some ways that you've seen women changing the world, including yourself, of course?
So, you know, I listen to a lot of audiobooks now. Because sitting and reading is not, I just can't do it anymore, but I listen. And I've been listening to a lot of the personal stories of Michelle Obama, Priyanka Chopra, Jonas, Indra Nui, Malala, you know, and so I feel that the stories that they've been saying or telling, and they talk about their struggles and their successes, I found I identified with a lot of those, some of those pieces. And I felt that, well, it kind of gave me a validation that, yes, you can do this. And that's how I sort of started leading and being bold, I suppose, and not worrying about what others thought about what I did. Like, yeah, okay, I made a mistake, sure. Let's figure out how to fix it and move on. And that's where I've sort of been getting my inspiration.
Yeah. So these bold women that are inspiring you, it's hard to do that work, right? And we have to find ways to replenish ourselves and have that self-care in order for us to continue being mavericks in this space too. So I'm curious, we've learned so much during the pandemic around the importance of taking care of ourselves. And we know, again, especially important for these bold female leaders. How do you take care of yourself? What lessons can we learn from RT?
The power of no. Because women really do say yes to everything and they pile everything up. But the power of saying no when you really can't do it. You know, this is my plate. It's full. I really can't do it. And it's okay to say no. I think I really learned that and I'm bold enough to say it. No, I can't do it. Let's figure out a different way, or you figure out a different way. Because we can burn both ends of the candle and not get and burn ourselves out. So for me, my sacred time is also at the end of the day, is my quiet time. I have to replenish. Being in education, it's a relationship business. You're constantly with people, and you have to constantly interact with different kinds of people. So it's a very social position or social kind of engagement you have to keep doing. So for me, quiet time by myself is what I really need to process that energy, that social energy. And then I'm up again, you know, that's great. Yes, I can do it. But I need that time. Like here where I am right now, I am alone. I live in my apartment by myself. I go to school and back, and people are like, oh, aren't you lonely? I said, no, I'm fine. I need time. I'm totally fine. I need to process this time. It is my time. It's my quiet time. I can be who I am. I can do what I want. I don't have to interact with anyone else. So those two things, you know, my quiet time and the power of no.
You've earned that quiet time too, my friend. I mean, you raising your children, being a board chair, and then moving home and being with your family, kind of reuniting with your family again, and then being in this amazing school. And I know that you spend time with your incredible teachers beyond school hours and on weekends too. So I've seen your cool stuff that you're doing. So you're always uplifting your amazing faculty, but that requires you to replenish too. So I think you deserve an apartment all by yourself. Big bottle of wine, maybe. I don't know. All right, now we're going to move into a section that is, we're going to start the sentence and you're going to finish a sentence. Okay?
Okay.
Are you ready? I like to consider it a little game, like our closing game. All right, so here is the first sentence starter. An event that changed my worldview.
COVID.
Do you want to elaborate on that? Because you were doing a lot during COVID.
Yes, I was doing a lot during COVID. I was actually still on the school board during COVID. And I had just finished up my work at EdSurge, and I was actually looking for my next thing. And my son was going off to college. So there was a lot of things happening in March around in that 2020, early 2020 time. I was going to finish up my 10 years on the board, and I was not running again. I had decided that. My son was heading off to college, so it was empty nest time. And so I was trying to look for the next thing. And that's how I, you know, this opportunity came up, and I moved in the middle of COVID. I moved from California to India after 30 years of being in California, in the U.S.
I'm definitely recalling that word bold that you used earlier. It continues to be a theme through your expressions and your sentiments. You know, I have one of those sentence starters too. Are you ready?
Sure.
I became a stronger person after I
had my son. I will say that. He made me look at the world completely differently, because he would never take, you know, the toddlers, the two-year-olds, when you tell them no, he would never just take no. He always needed to know why. And so that's when I realized, okay, you know what, this kid is different, and I'm going to let him be different. My daughter was 5 years older, completely different child. And I said, all right. So every step of the way, I fought for him and fought for what he wanted to do. And with my, you know, yes, my husband, I said, was my mentor, but he was also a little bit of a traditional father, you know. And so he couldn't accept it that the child wants to dig in the sand outside and figure out if something has a seed or not. And I would say, eat it and find out. And then he would. And then he became the best gardener in our house. He was doing all the vegetable farming in the house. So just this kid, he really did change me as well. And I always attribute every gray hair on my head. I have never dyed my hair or colored my hair. So every gray hair I attribute to a story about my son. So he says, Mom, if I was not here, he would be completely gray. I'm like, thanks. So I'm so,
you're like,
so
don't
salt
test
and pepper.
It.
I'm just salt and pepper. So, you know. But yes. So.
Oh, and he's a phenomenal young man today, right?
Yeah, he is. He's still, you know, he's still different. He's still figuring life out. He's doing, you know, geology and environmental science and videography. I don't know what all he's doing. I lose track after a while. But
he's still digging in dirt.
Yeah,
that's the bottom
he
line.
Is, he is still digging.
He's either digging in it or he's filming it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
All righty. How about this one? My life improved when I.
When I led that school district through some really tough times in Saratoga, it was tough. And I developed really thick skin during that time. You know, it would look everything so personally, and it would affect me at home. And then I was like, no, I can't let this happen. I can't let this affect my family life or my professional life, because, you know, as you know, a board trustee is a volunteer position. So it's over and above whatever else you do. So, I took my superintendent at the time, he said, yes, you're first you get sworn in as a board member, and then you get sworn at. So, you know, and it turned out to be true. You know, you had parents, you had teachers, you had everybody, the community. And it was, I think those were some tough years we had. And it really made me a stronger and thicker-skinned person.
Well, it sounds like you built a lot of fortitude, but also you continue to embody the grace of who you are as a leader in that space. And I am certain those who may have not always had the most beautiful energy towards the work found the beauty in how you were leading in this work. So again, thank you for your service to public education. You know, Cicero says this, and I think this will resonate with you. He says, nobody can give you wiser advice than yourself. And so it sounds like you were constantly in that cycle. And so as you think about this wisdom that you have, what's a decision that perhaps even changed your life forever?
I think this decision of moving to this place here in India, I think it has really changed my view of who I am and what the world is and what the world needs. You know, just a little sidebar about the school that I'm leading right now. It is a school in a northern state of India called Uttarakhand, and it's a very, very harsh living here. It's mountainous. It's, basic infrastructure is really, it's very hilly. So the roads and, you know, there are villages here where there's no electricity, no power, no water, no running water. And education for girls was not a priority. So the school was started about 20 years ago with that mission of educating children of this state, primarily girls. And, I feel that that's the impact I want to make for these girls, because they really have potential, but they don't have a positive role model or any guide to get them through this. Through COVID, actually seeing these children, their life and their worldview has come out of the little screen in front of them and through YouTube. So working with them on how do you make it, like, what is real and what is not. Yes, you can see, you know, the fancy cars and the fancy homes and all this food and this dance and glitter and all of that. But what's real? You know, what is reality? How do you get there? If you want to get there, great. Let's figure out a way for you to get there. But, you know, trying to help them understand what's the right fit for them so that they could be happy and so that they could be employable and be change makers for their own communities, because these are all first generation learners. And so I think this is really what's driving me every day. I'm learning how to navigate the work culture, which is totally different from the US. I had never worked in the US, in India before. I'd only studied here. So it's different. It's a lot of like, okay, that's the way it is. It's a non-negotiable. I'm not going to fight it. That kind of a mindset is what, you know, I've sort of resolved to, because what's the point of fighting it? Because it's non-negotiable. Let me focus at the task at hand. Let me fight the fight that I can fight versus trying to navigate and change this, you know, built-in work culture or just culture.
How fortunate that you chose this bold and audacious path to change the life of young girls. You're on this podcast helping us think about the lives of women. And I couldn't help but ask a follow-up question as you think about your role. What have you learned from these girls as well? Because this was a bold decision to come to this space and place. What are some lessons you've learned from them? How are they changing your life?
They have made me just do more with less. It's just like, I know the other part is also like not assuming many things. They've taught me that, you know what, some of these kids have never been on a train in India. And train is sort of a very, the main mode of transport for a lot of people going from one place to another. So I'm taking 5 children on a little trip this coming Saturday. We have a break, 1 week break that's coming up. And these 5 children, our school also has 1/3 boys. We have 2/3 girls and 1/3 boys. That's sort of the charter. So we have these 5 children, 2 boys and 3 girls, who actually don't have any homes to go to. Or they're very, you know, it's better for them to stay at the school. Our school is part residential as well. And so I said, well, you know, let me take them on a little trip. So I've got 2 teachers and these 5 children, and I'm taking them on a 3-day trip. And I asked them, I said, how many of you have been on a train? Only 2 of them raised their hands. And that's what kind of like, oh my goodness, what a big assumption I made that they've been on a train. So they've never seen a train station. So to take them to a big city is going to be a pretty incredible journey for them as well as for me. So, and a different culture, a different state, you know. So they've taught me not to assume things is the bottom line.
I can't wait to hear about this adventure and how you continue to learn from their experience and the stories that come out of this trip and the many trips that will continue. You know, Keisha, I feel so fortunate to have had a little peering into the life of RT. And I know you've learned probably some more in this conversation as well. This conversation has been powerfully bold, courageous. It's been a story of, again, as you said, not assuming things, but it's also been very much a story of replenished leadership. And so I know I've learned a lot, and I'm curious, Keisha, what have you learned from your dear friend, RT?
Well, I have always thought she's an incredible rock star, but I knew she was a Montessori teacher, but there's something about being a Montessorian that it just is part of your core. And I think Maria Montessori would be so proud of the journey that you've taken in kind of transitioning from an empty nest. Like you're like, well, I may have an empty nest, but it doesn't really have to be empty. You are a phenomenal mom, and you've taken all of your mom life to this wonderful part of Northern India, and you're applying it to all these children who may not have the fabulous mom that you have been to your kids. And I just adore that about you. I applaud it. And I think those kids are so lucky and so blessed that you made that decision and that you have a phenomenal partner that had love and respect for you and encouraged you to take that leap. I know it was a big one. And I just think that is such a gift to those kids. And I really, you know, I've known you long enough to know that you are really good at saying no. And I've learned how to say no from you. And that's something we don't do really well as women. We're really good at just taking on. Another thing that I know that you really didn't talk about here, but we've talked about it outside of here, and I think it's an important note to make, is the value that you have. I have a lot of conversations with women about the value that they place on themselves. Like when they're negotiating work, you've been really clear and really good about saying, look, you know, I may be a lady, but I'm worth more than a penny. And making sure that people know your value when you're in a negotiation place. And I've learned a lot from you on that. And I appreciate that lesson. And I'm going to share that little lesson with our ladies that are listening. Don't undervalue yourself. Always, you know, if you think you're worth this, double it. That's what you're really worth. Maybe even tripling it. Anyway, so hey, what is there anything that you wanted to share with our audience that maybe you didn't have the chance to share? Or if you can't think of anything there, is there something you would tell your childhood self?
My childhood self would never have imagined that I would be who I am today. Really, because it was, would never have imagined. And I think that's the beauty of it, not knowing also what lies ahead and kind of just defining it as you go. And I do remember once I had a long conversation with a friend, and she wanted, when I worked at Apple, actually, I had a colleague and said, how did you get into this? And I was telling her the story, and she says, you know, it sounds like every time there was something new in technology or something, you tried it. So you made that little turn and you tried it. I said, actually, that's true. I never thought about it that way. So that's, I think, what sums it up. Like, there was always some new opportunity, which I looked back and I said, okay, these are my collective skills that I can use. And then what's next? So it's one of those that I have to continue learning. If I'm, you know, people look at my resume and said, my gosh, you've done so many things. I said, yes, but there's a common theme. It's teaching and learning. Either it's for someone else or it's for myself. So, and by the way, I dragged my husband over to India too. He's also in India, and he is also an
awesome.
He's also in academia. He is also leading a business school in Mumbai, in a very big city, in the big city.
So now we're
in the same time zone. So.
That's awesome. That's important because
it is.
I know you and I have a hard time negotiating that time zone. So he probably nailed it, but.
Right. So, yeah. So that's sort of my last thoughts. And, you know, let's see what's next. I have no idea.
Well, I know it's not your last thought because there will be many to come, and you've inspired tons of thinking for this audience. And I know for ourselves here on this podcast. And, you know, you talked about the childhood voice, and it helps me think about the work of Malala and how she used voice and how she found her voice. And gosh, what an honor to find your voice so early. And she said, I tell my story not because it is unique, but because it is the story of so many girls. And I would argue that it is a unique voice, and so is your voice. But your voice also lifts up the voice of so many. So we thank you for sharing that with us today. You know, we're wondering what our listeners might be reflecting upon and how they might be connecting to this story and the story of so many women and their uniqueness. And so, Keisha and Artie, I have one of those coaching questions that honors the space that you've taken us into today. So here's the coaching question for today. What might be some ways that you replenish and expand relationships in global ways? Again, what might be some ways that you replenish and expand relationships in global ways?
The trick is global there, my friends, thinking way out of our country lines, just like RT has. And I cannot thank you enough for joining us today, spending a little bit of time here, sharing your wisdom, sharing your journey. You've certainly inspired me and Frances and our listeners to become bolder women, take risks, and say no when necessary.
Indeed. We want you all to know how much we appreciate you and the fierceness that you lead with and love with each and every day. Let's take care of one another and let's make sure that we live with this inspired message.
That's right. And join us for our next podcast where we're going to highlight another Shero in education, exploring their M's. And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, and answer that coaching question that Frances just posed. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.